second, before that, members, I think I must express my personal on the event.
There's 10 main things in the book. It's a very short story, and I'm just going to summarize that because I will give a quick overview of the book. Main aspect of the show is the refusal of the referral process and certain consequential meetings that are with this appeal. Section 51(1) is amended to provide a regional court to jurisdiction to convict and sentence a person found guilty of an offense referred to Part 1, Schedule 2, to imprisonment for life. This amendment does not stand on its own and should be read within the context of four further amendments. Thirdly, a proviso has been added to Section 51(2)(a) to provide that if a regional court is opposed to a lesser sentence in respect of an offence referred to Part 1 of Schedule 2, it shall have jurisdiction to impose imprisonment for a period not exceeding 30 years. The first thing is against the regional court jurisdiction to imprison somebody for life. And then secondly, we say if they find a special fulfilling and they want to give less than life, but more than their current jurisdiction of only 15 years, so they think this person should get like 20 or 25, they can now impose imprisonment of up to 30 years. So that's why that provider is there, to fill that gap. Otherwise, they could have just given.
On this event, it was called the Excellence Award. And it's for the first time, Commissioner, that you are having it as a national, always regional, provincial, but the Friday's one was a national for the first time. And it was very good. I have enjoyed myself very thoroughly. You have missed out. I jived there. Who was the singer there? What was his name? Ringo. Ringo was there, and I know Cindy liked Ringo. Ringo's music, and she was not there, but that's fine. I am tried for your part as well, and everybody, even the dead father. I have made thumb drives and everything. For you. I know that you like thumb drives.
It was
a very good occasion, Commission, and I'm very much happy. I'm very much impressed that people, the Commissioner was not so stressful like he is today. He was relaxed, he chilled there with us, and everybody was dancing. Commissioner, keep on doing it. Every time. Even at local level. Let's do it at local level. Just to motivate our staff. And let us take this thing out of their heads that all of them are corrupt. Let us show them that we are not taking it. And it's only you who can do that. But members, let's go to our agenda. It is a briefing by the department on the budget. I am going to hand over to Commissioner. Next week we will have public hearings on the budget from people from the public out there, so that let's hear what the public about this. I was very much disappointed that one of our members who stays there in housing were not present at the excellent award. That is Winnie was not there. She comes in now. I know that she likes the child, but she was not there. And she missed out. She is 8 kilometers away from the venue. was not there. But that's why she will see me next year again, on the 7th of March next year. Commissioner, over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Senators, members of the Audit Commission, colleagues, as well as colleagues from other parts of the civil society. Knowing this, I think I also have to acknowledge it's always good that when you do want to show up, people want to show up too, you come. And so wouldn't that work if you wouldn't, then you know, it was all just to show up to you and thank you for having ordered me to have tracked
that. Thank you. The last time that I had to do it.
No, it was indeed a good feeling to have you and Jesse McQueen at the Excellence Award. And you're right, the truth of the matter is, there's a lot of good happening within DC, a lot of good. One of the unfortunate things is that we did not feature anything on why these people were receiving the award, simply because we've not had enough time. But if you begin to listen to these stories of why people were nominated and awarded, it is for really leave a very warm feeling. These are not the spoken, very ordinary people at the coalface trying to make a difference. If we had more time, I would have gone into some of those categories. But indeed, Chair, we really want to institutionalize excellence within VCS and to recognize and celebrate it when it happens. And this is but one way of doing so. When we launched our integrated human resource strategy, we said we need to invest a lot more in our people. And so this is really the start of a range of activities that begin to acknowledge people and to invest in them, both from a training point of view, capacity building, and also career pathing. But we will touch on some of that. And of course, the media highlighted, there was one media report on the incident, and it highlighted one unfortunate incident that I made with your concurrence to touch on that. With the late Mr. Matam, we recognized his widow as one of the people who received the Nobile Posthumous Award. And that award is really dedicated to people who in the line of duty have died and who we really believe capture the essence of what Siyabulela Nobile stood for. And our thinking about instituting an award in his honor is also part of saying that we want to celebrate and recognize those of us who are within the system. We want to recognize our own. Now, the City Press article focuses on the story of having interviewed Mrs. Matam. Her husband was a student correction official who died and worked at Portsmouth. And she was really lamenting the fact that since he died, she thought she'd been struggling to get his benefits from the government employee pension fund. We do know, I happen also to be a trustee of the government employee pension fund, and the issue of member benefits and the turnaround time is really of great concern from the government employee pension fund side. And the problems that we generally experience there is really incomplete documentation that family members submit, so the process of submitting and resubmitting becomes a tedious one. But the DPS has recognized that as a weakness and is beginning to set up local offices in the region in order to give people much easier access. Of course, it won't help her own situation because this is the process that DPS is starting on. But I also need to say that indeed, in recognizing someone who has died while on duty, we again want the message that we want to send to Mrs. Matam and people out there is that we are really continuing to embrace the family members. So it's really not a matter of saying that this is now deceased, we should lose contact. It's really one of claiming the broader family. And we will continue to find ways of, while we acknowledge that we can never share the pain of family members, to find ways to include them. Chairperson, I'm giving this background because for us as a management, we've been concerned for a long time that when people who have committed their lives to DCS and to the nation, when they become, we've seen how families suffer, and we have taken up this matter with the Minister of Finance and the Minister of DPSA to ask them to allow us to introduce a death grant for officials who die while on duty. And I really have great pleasure to announce that we do, with effect from 1st of April, such a death grant will come into place. That will help reduce the impact. The amount is 200,000 rand that we pay to the family. And it's not a matter of saying that that's the value of life. It's really just a means to acknowledge that there's normally, when death is sudden, there's all kinds of difficulties that family and loved ones experience. But unfortunately, Ms. Matam won't benefit from this in the sense that we cannot make this retrospective. But surely, her pain is well understood by us and the difficulties that people like her experience when we lose a loved one. And so we have received feedback from the Minister of Finance that allows us to proceed with this. That's in addition to other mechanisms already in place, although in his case, having been a correctional official for less than 2 years, the pension accumulated can't be that much. But we are awaiting also his application for injury on duty from the Compensation Commission. And I'm aware that today the Area Commissioner of Portsmouth is also meeting with the family to again look at how we can service it. So I'm touching on this because that was the one negative side of the story that was published in the media. And I really don't want to come across indifferent to the plight of our members. But what we want to assist is, even if you have passed on, we still own you, we still regard you as part of our broader family, and that's the purpose of the non-medial book. And we do hope that the family will see it with that spirit. Chairperson, having allowed me to do that, the time when we talk about our strategic plan for 2008 up to 2010, obviously, one day is not going to be enough. I don't want to say too much in my introductory statement, other than the fact that the plan itself is a culmination of many processes that include rigorous assessment or evaluation of the outcomes of the previous year. I think what is particularly to be noted in the current strategic plan, Chairperson, is an effort to begin to improve the way in which we will begin to measure our results and the outcomes going forward. Of course, if this year is the baseline year, it becomes a bit difficult because we need to use this year to see how subsequent years will be measured. And in the sense of my Chief Deputy Commissioner, Operations and Management Support, he's got a very important job where he is in Pretoria. And when you think he's underground, he's really there trying to push some very important strategic development that's necessary. He's led the process of helping us to productize our work for the first time within her grant. We've seen our work being organized in 7 major clusters. And so when you begin to hear our presentation this year, you begin to get that sense. Using project management theories and practices. More than that, she's also led the process of developing or strengthening our evaluation and monitoring capabilities, something that's very important in the public sector. In fact, the work that she's been leading is so crucial to testing, especially has identified us as the first department to pilot the development of measurable indicators for certain areas of work in order to link that more clearly to budgetary allocation. And so we're very happy that Tesla has the confidence in us to test that initiative, and we really believe that other departments will learn from us in that regard.
I don't hope that they will learn from you.
I hope that they will emulate us, never mind Dandy, that they will do exactly what we're doing. So, Chairperson, yes, indeed, there is a capability within DTS. One thing that's often not celebrated and acknowledged sufficiently, and I've known this even before I joined DTS, is that there's always been a very good discipline when dealing with offender information. And we've always had very credible information, unlike what we can say about many departments. So when we talk measurement, that's the starting point. And I think certainly they recognize that. Others will also come by as time progresses. But Jefferson, to be true to my undertaking, I'm not going to do too much talking. My team here today to do the presentation, Chief Deputy Commissioner, Operations and Management Support, Ms. China will take us through the overall strategic documents, strategic planning documents. Then the Chief Financial Officer and the team will come in and deal with the financials in regard to the strategic plan. Ms. Singh is also supported by the director responsible for budget, Mr. Shimamola, who is sitting on the left. And of course, you know the other colleagues, Mr. Abalala, director of executive support, is here. Mr. Valerian Bet is from Treasury. Always forget Mr. Bogo, who is currently standing for parliamentary liaison in the Office of Minister. And our liaison office in the Office of the Deputy Minister. Chairperson, without much ado, let me give over to Ms. China to lead us on this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members and other attendees. Effectively, what we're going to try and do today is to give a bit of a background in terms of strategic planning, because we have made some quite significant advances within this year. That will cover our priorities. It will cover the way in which we are relating to the 18 priorities that we're addressing in state relations and risk, service delivery improvement issues. And from then on, we will go through the performance information in relation to each of the budget programs, some in more detail than others. We have also made available to the Portfolio Committee the draft of the strategic plan. So any detail that you don't get in the presentation, we will find all of that detail in the strategic plan. If we then look at our planning and our priorities, I think the crucial aspect that we've been trying to address is to ensure that our strategic plan takes us further in the shift from a fairly intensive white paper and policy development process to a very strong focus on operational management. So we've tried to ensure that there's quite a stronger operational dimension to our strategic plan, that we are able to ensure that we are addressing the challenges of operational management, but at the same time also being able to ensure that our strategic plan deals with only the strategic level of issues. So you will find that there are elements of the strategic plan in its format of last year that are not continued through to this year's draft strategic plan. But I think what's important for the Portfolio Committee to understand is we've not lost those elements. But we have developed a business plan for year one that deals with a lot more of the operational issues, and these are only getting the more strategic issues in the strategic plan.
Sorry, we have the document in front of you.
Yeah. Chairperson, can I maybe just assist there should be three documents that members have. The one that is on the screen, which is what we had sent to the Portfolio Committee a week ago, morning. We have distributed today an additional document that is in this format that provides the Portfolio Committee with more detail in relation to certain of the elements that I will be working on. We don't intend to talk to the detail of this presentation, but we have provided to the Portfolio Committee because it does give far more detailed information in relation to the issues that we are talking about. The third presentation is the presentation on the ESG allocation, which the CFO will be presenting. And I hope that enables the Portfolio Committee to deal with the documentation.
We have all the documents that we have.
We don't have this one.
Thank you.
document are you using? Because I don't have any.
Strategic plan.
The document that was originally presented to the portfolio committee last week. It appears to be a strategic plan. Sorry for not getting made it clear at the beginning of what the conversation is available. I think the other element that is very really important for us to stand for the portfolio committee is that the project with the National Treasury on the program performance information and ensuring that we are able to develop that. We have recently defined it as, or recognized the difference between the performance indicators that will cascade right away through the medium term and even into the long term as indicators of what we will measure ourselves by. And then the service delivery targets that we will set for individual years. And I think that refinement has enabled us to be far more precise in terms of setting ourselves milestones for each of the years. We've also, through the project with the technical assistance unit of the Treasury around our monitoring and evaluation system and the project around the program performance information indicators, we also ensure that we've got a system now of indicators increasingly that can play out. The indicators that would then be in a strategic plan and in the e-documents would be the high level of indicators. What we've also done quite a lot of reflection on is the way in which we have set our indicators. The portfolio committee will be aware of the fact that our indicators previously had been X number of social work sessions per year. We are trying to shift from that to looking at the percentage of offenders that are benefiting from those social work sessions. So you will see in the strategic plan and as the project with Treasury, the piloting with Treasury has passed through to the other programs, we currently lost the corrections and security in that project. You will see a shift in the way in which we actually measure ourselves. The aim is to be able to ensure that we're really able to assess the impact that our services have on our members. What we then need to recognize is that during the course of this coming financial year, we will be refining the indicators. But already I think the benefits of that engagement with Treasury has already indicated for us some substantial improvement in our indicators. Alongside those two projects is obviously the refining of our policy in relation to planning, resourcing and reporting, the development of a monitoring and evaluation and reporting system for the department that will enable us to be accountable to the portfolio committee in a far more objective and quantifiable way. The second aspect that we want to pick up on was what our priorities are for this coming financial year. The portfolio committee will be aware of the fact that we've been working on the 7-day establishment and job refinement for the last 3 years. This coming financial year is the year in which both the 7-day establishment and the occupational special dispensation would in fact hit the ground and be implemented in certainly in relation to 7-day establishment in a phased way. But that is a key priority for the coming financial year to ensure that we're able to deliver on that. We have also recognised, and in part through the functioning under the leadership of the Commissioner, the Regional Commissioners Forum, that a very specific focus needs to be placed on the case management system, including the functioning of curriculum supervision and the parole system, both in terms of the way that the community corrections officers function and in terms of the way in which the consistency within our parole placement process. So that has been identified as the second area of priority. Obviously, it's not in a ranking order, but that is a key area that is being driven by the Regional Commissioners in terms of ensuring that we are able to implement what we set in relation to that. In the handout that you have been given, the more detailed breakdown, you have reflections on the social reintegration project, which plays a key role in us being able to deliver on that priority too. The third area is to ensure that we function with our JT criminal justice system partners to be able to invigorate the reintegration or the integration of those systems. Commissioners already reflected that we have in the department a very well developed database of information around the inmates within our facilities. Part of what we need to ensure is that there's a consistency in that information system across the criminal justice system. But equally, the management down of levels of overcrowding in relation to remand detainees obviously also revolves around an interface between those criminal justice departments. The reduction of overcrowding obviously remains a key priority, something that is certainly not a one-year priority, it's an ongoing process. We are currently embarking on a review out of our risk management processes around the success of our sort of strategy on overcrowding, and we will be looking at the EEC meeting in May and whether there are elements of that strategy that need to be enhanced or reviewed or additional elements brought into it. The next priority for correctional services obviously is the completion or the initiation and completion of the building of the new centres. And that again is reflected in one of our key strategic projects, the Infrastructural Development Programme. We have geared our strategic plan to be able to support those priorities. All of those aspects are quite clearly addressed within the strategic plan. Looking in addition to where our strategic weaknesses are, and the issue of non-compliance is something that we continue to translate through very importantly into the budget program. You will see a strategy that relates to the compliance implementation and compliance with the policy of that particular budget program. The strategic projects that the Commissioner has referred to, what is important is that we are going to be including in our strategic plan this year the high-level project plan of each of these seven projects. The Centre of Excellence project is the first of the project. Part of what we are aiming to be able to do, apart from ensuring that the Centre of Excellence are where we are fully implementing unit management, fully implementing the policy of the department, what we are also aiming to do is to use Centre of Excellence in relation to being able to pilot and test either new policy, new strategy, or in fact to test and pilot some of the other strategic projects. The enhancing security and safety is a key project that has two legs. It links very closely to our strategy around improving the regional security, ensuring that there's enhanced security from personnel involvement. It also addresses the issues of ensuring that we are better, that we can improve the way in which we manage security-related information within the department. And then the other leg of it, obviously, is the security technology element, a key interface with our development of the technology strategy for the department. So we've got a more long-term vision of how technology can enhance the delivery within the department, and also free rehabilitation personnel to be able to play that function rather than being able to use functions that could be provided by technology. The remand detention project, called in this document the MHE, that's the original name of it was the Management of Awaiting Trial Detention. It's now been called remand detention because it includes people who may have finished their trial but are awaiting detention. So the definition that is now in use in the JCA is the remand detention. The details of the project are in this document. I think that it's the second section of the document. Unfortunately, the pages of it have not been numbered, but I think that what is important, if you look on the first slide of that section, there are key objectives that have been developed for that project that relate to ensuring that there is an improvement in the current management of remand detention, that we can look at the backlog, the blockages within the criminal justice system, and address those to ensure that there is improved effectiveness of the criminal justice system in relation to remand detention. But we also then look at what is the strategic level approach the government needs to adopt in relation to services that we around detention. The next aspect of it relates to the establishment of dedicated remand detention systems. Looking at what is the infrastructure, what are the facilities, the requirements that are needed in a remand detention system. Somewhat different from what we need in a correctional centre. And currently there isn't that refinement of what the minimum requirements are for those facilities. And then obviously in the long term sense to take back two chapters, the proposal around the institutional arrangements and the mandate in relation to remand detention. the secondary attachment and job requirements is again addressed in some of the HRS section of the report, in particular in relation to the occupational special dispensation, not only in relation to nurses, but the development of an OSD, occupational special dispensation, for correctional officials. That is at the last section of the handout document that we have given to you. The piloting of the secondary establishment will take place in Johannesburg from April to June, so we will be able in June then to evaluate that aspect and be able to intend to develop a new system that will then be rolled out in a phased way into other centres. The ORP, the offender rehabilitation part, a project that has been presented to the project committee, again is included in the handout. That is a key element of ensuring that through the Centre of Excellence project, we've got the ability, the institutional capacity to be able to deliver on the ORP. The social reintegration project is also in the handout. I think the key element there is the challenge of being able to ensure that we build the institutional capacity in our community curriculum offices to deliver on the new context of social reintegration. An update is the documentation around where we are in terms of the discussion documents being approved, the policy being developed, and the procedures currently in the process. A key element of ensuring that we update the institutional capacity of community curriculum offices and build the judiciary confidence in community curriculum centers. Which is critically important in terms of 1 hour of time pressure, but also in terms of where people should get to the rehabilitation. The final leg of the project is the infrastructural development project, which covers not only the building of new facilities, but maintenance programs, renovation programs, rebuilding or replacement of the structures. If we can move into our next slide, the service delivery improvement process. Obviously, the entire plan ultimately is aimed at service delivery improvement. But I think the critical aspect is that there's a requirement from the UPSA and the Public Service Association that we have a service delivery improvement plan within our strategic plan. We're currently involved in the process of regional interaction to kind of identify from management area level what are the key services that we should be able to focus on in terms of checking what our current standard is and what standard do we want to lift that to. That process will have reached a conclusion by the end of March. We hope by the 20th of March to process the information that has come from the region. I think that the critical challenge we've experienced in relationships is to try and ensure that we can narrow it down to something that is really manageable. We are aiming out of the processes that have taken place so far. It seems that we would be identifying three key service delivery areas that we would be aiming to address. An aspect that we have not, before we move to the administration program, an aspect that we have not flagged, brought out in the presentation is the fact that we are also in the strategic plan linking our work to some of the key APEX projects. We have identified which of the projects that relate to our work, some very directly, some less directly, and we are aiming to ensure that those are incorporated into the way in which we plan in the department and given in the way that we. So we're able more accurately to track the kind of contribution that we're making, for example, to the project when we're using the backlog of cases. A critical element for us, the benefit of that is that our number of demands pending will drop quite significantly. If we then move to the administration program, the format of the presentation is that for each of the budget programs, we've listed for you the measurable objectives, which is unchanged from previous years. We've then identified what our performance indicators are, lifted up for you the key strategies, and then identified what our targets are, and the targets that we have focused on for year one. So that would be the commercial targets and 8 to 9. In terms of the administration program, the program committee will be aware of the fact that covers finance, corporate services, central services, and owners. What we've done in this presentation is to lift up the finance section and the corporate services. Not that the unwanted corporate, but it's a plethora of countries, a plethora of information. All of that information is covered in the draft strategic plan that you have. But I think the areas of financial and supply chain management are critically important for us, because that is an area in which we have have had a number of audit queries and issues in relation to this. And obviously corporate services, given the nature of our work and the fact that our work is essentially people-driven, becomes a critically important aspect. And again, there are areas there where we have faced issues of audit queries and issues that relate to our qualification. Obviously, the administration program covers a range of different functions that are mapped out in the measure of objectives. I'm not going to read through each of the measurable objectives. The performance indicators that we've identified are aiming to enable us to track our progress in relation to issues that are problematic in the department. So we are aiming to be able to, on a quarterly basis as we go through, to track the issues of the value of waste from EBITDA and also expenditure, the level of over and underspending, the issues of compliance with our asset register and verification, as well as the issues of our procurement processes, on ensuring that we are involving HDRs in our audience of tenders, and tracking also a critical issue of ensuring that we can systematically reduce the percentage of late payments. So those are the performance indicators, obviously, that relate to finance and supply chain management, and relating to corporate services. There's a need for us to ensure that we've got sufficient and properly capacitated members and management. Obviously, that's a critical issue in relation to our vacancy rate. The vacancy rate is included in your handout presentation. I think it's planned towards the end of this indicator, the statement in relation to that. The health and safety of employees is a key aspect, and we've done significant work over the past year in terms of occupational health and safety. The management, employee relations management, the relationship between management and employees and unions is obviously another element that needs to be tracked in relation to that. The alignment of our organizational structure and functions and post-establishment, a key project that the department has been involved in over the last 2 years, as another key aspect. If I then move to the strategy, in relation to the key strategy for this administration program, leading out to the competition is to correctly identify deficiencies and in the strategic plan we have listed the countless challenges that have come up from our audit experience, identifying those weaknesses, to reduce the vacancy level, to implement a new function aligned organizational structure, and to implement the career development system and improve performance management, a key element of our integrated human resource strategy. So the targets that we have indicated for the year are that we will measure the level of those deficiencies we were tracking through the year. We want to be able to reduce the average turnaround time for filling a vacancy to 120 days, that's 120 days from the time that the vacancy arises. But we want to reduce our vacancy level, but also because we're really aware of the challenges we have in terms of providing professional staff, or what we refer to as test skills. That vacancy rate is significantly high. We want to be able to reduce it below 50%. And then we want to be able to implement the new career pathing model and then revise our performance management policies at the school and professional services. Moving then to the security program and leaving the school program committee to Bishop at Central Services and OMS in their own time. The measurable objective for security has not changed, it remains the same. It ensures that we are able to avoid criminal activity, avoid escape, and that we provide an environment which is safe for all of the people in our facilities, be they inmates, be they service providers, be they members. The performance indicators, and I think that this is a critical aspect of where the project with National Security around the new framework for program performance information has assisted us enormously. We are going to be tracking in terms of the indicators for security, the number of escapes per 1,000 inmates, because it really doesn't make sense to measure the total number of escapes. So we've brought in the ratio that it's the number of escapes per 10,000 inmates, the number of assaults per 10,000 inmates. That will be aggregated. Obviously, our own information will be able to break it down into the nature of those incidents as well. And then the number of unnatural deaths, 13,000 inmates. The provision of active security within the community facilities is a critical part of the technology project, so we will be measuring that. And then we will also be adding the number of officials involved in assisting the case and running The key strategies that we have been in relation to security are compliance with the existing policy systems and standards and the federal legislation. A key aspect of being able to measure as we go through the year our level of compliance with the security requirements. And then the second strategy relates to improved security management to improve the detention and working environment. So to take on board both the circumstances of the inmates as well as the working environment of the staff and service providers with the ultimate aim of ensuring that we contribute to the safety of the public. The specific targets then for the coming financial year, and you will see in the strategic plan that we track across the 5 years on a decreasing basis. I don't think that I need to read through each of those, but the important aspect is that you have indicated then clear targets for each of the elements. Of the challenge then obviously is in terms of regional operational planning to be able to work up the way in which region will contribute to achieving those targets for the next financial year. Moving to corrections programs, the measurable objective again is unchanged from what the portfolio committee would be familiar with. It addresses the specific challenge of correcting offending behavior based on a needs-based approach directly relates to what the White Paper has said in relation to our work of correction. The performance indicators here, and again this is an area that the CPR project we work with the Treasury to refine the indicators on this program. The one that we will be tracking and which we obviously have been tracking for a number of years will be the level of overcrowding in GPS facilities. And you will see in the strategic plan that there's a process of increasing that. What obviously needs to be factored into it is that at a certain point when the new facilities are built, we should land up with a significant drop in terms of our level of overcrowding. The second indicator that we are tracking is the number of offenders serving more than 24 months, obviously bearing in mind that these are the actors in the process of the offenders who have been assessed and have been sentenced. That obviously lands us up in terms of the target within a major challenge because we have a situation where we've got an enormous backlog of people who don't have those sentences. We also are tracking the number of correctional centres that have implemented the advancement, a key element of being able to move to delivery on the offender rehabilitation path. The total number of pages labelled with clear again an impact that we have been measuring for a number of years. We've then added the percentage of inmates in DCS facilities who are receiving meals in accordance with the Correctional Services Act, an aspect that with the implementation of 7-day establishment, we should see a very significant improvement in our ability to comply with that element. And the last element is to track the percentage of offenders in quality assured and endorsed correctional programs. The indicators, the strategies that we then deal with in the first thing deals with those compliance with policy. The second is to improve the effective and compliant administration management of correctional centers. Apart from the actual correction intervention is a major area of managing our correctional centers and is a body of work and administration that needs to go into that. Then the provision of quality assurance correctional programs is support from service providers, a key new element of being able to ensure that we can support from outside of the department is the provision of the maintenance of service population levels, reducing overcrowding, and then our effective management of demand and interface between our strategic plan and the specific project, hoping that the delivery on that project will assist us in being able to use significant potential relations to demand. The targets then for the coming year are listed on the next slide. They relate to ensuring that the unit management, which is defined as including structure day and senior of the day, is implemented at 4 centers of excellence as well as 51 other centers. That then translates through the other financial years to completion. And that we start off in terms of the correctional sentence plan, that's the CSP in the document. That we start off by saying everybody who is admitted, the new admission, will immediately move to correctional sentence plan, and that we then identify all of those offenders who are due for release and we deal with those correctional sentence plans and the interventions that are necessary. And that will then just take to a point at which we have dealt with the backlog of offenders exorbitant the number of overcrowding jobs in the current year to 140, and that then obviously increases over time. And I'll wrap in terms of time. The development program, again, measurable objectives unchanged, educational skills and other development related programs. The performance indicators that we have identified here are very similar to the intent that we've had before, but I think what's shifted is that we're moving to be able to measure the percentage of offenders rather than saying the X number of passes or X number of school qualifications. So the percentage of offenders in formal education, school qualifications, an increased percentage of offenders, skills utilization, and opportunities for employability in both the agriculture and production workshops. And then finally, an indicator that relates to the value of the products that we're producing for self-sufficiency, poverty, alleviation, and income generation. I think one of our concerns has been that we've been doing a lot of poverty alleviation or income generation projects, but we've not actually been tracking that. We've not been able to adequately report on our delivery on that aspect. The key strategy then within development, obviously the compliance of policy again is there. The second strategy deals with enhancing the education, sports, recreation, arts and culture level of offenders in partnership with service providers, recognizing that we're not able to deliver on all of those entirely on our own, but service providers play a key role in keeping this within those areas. And then the third strategy relates to the improved use of the offenders who've been skilled through the training processes and enhancing the opportunities for employability, and again, a partnership with external service providers in relation to this. We have then moved to the target area, and here we are still in the process of shifting from the number of programs to the number of offenders. But in relation to formal education, we targeted 22,000 offenders need to be involved, and that we will then translate that into the percentage of offenders. In terms of the participation in sports, recreation, arts and culture, we've identified the number, and in terms of the skills development program, we've again identified the number that will translate into the percentage of offenders. Okay, that deals with the issue of development. We move to the other program of care. The measurement objective is unchanged, and basically deals with a needs-based approach to the well-being of inmates within our facilities. The performance indicators that we have at the moment, and what I want to re-emphasize, is that apart from the curriculum and security program, in which the indicators have already been through the piloting with National Treasury, the performance indicators in relation to all of the other budget programs will be interrogated through that project during the course of this year, and there will be a refinement. But what we've already begun to do is to use the learning from what we've done with curriculums and security to start shifting the indicators. But we will be shifting them through the project with Treasury as we go through the course of this year. The indicators for the care program then deal with the percentage of offenders in the care program shifting away from saying there will be X number of social services or psychological services, but you're looking at what is the impact on offenders of those services. We will then track also the number of correctional centres implementing comprehensive primary health care services. And then looking at the percentage, looking at the access to primary health care for offenders in relation to TB, sexually transmitted infections, HIV and chronic infections. So we're able to ensure that in relation to those key government priority areas, we're able to track and ensure that the offenders that need that access have that access. And then the last indicator relates to the access to comprehensive HIV and AIDS programs and services for the offenders. One of the elements that we will be doing in the refining of the performance indicators is also looking at the kinds of indicators that we've been using in the risk management process. We've identified key indicators that we're using to track whether we are managing to mitigate risk effectively. So there should be a coming together of those two processes as well. The strategy is then in relation to care. The compliance with policy is a critical aspect, and I think in this relationship there are certain elements of our policies that are determined by other departments. We need to ensure that we're able to comply and bring those elements into our policies. The second strategy relates to providing comprehensive primary health care services to we send this to Lamar Detaney as well as to the ladies of incarceration mothers, the three elements, three categories of people that we are obliged to ensure primary health care services are delivered to. The third strategy relates to provision of needs-based care programs to offenders. I think the emphasis there is the development of care programs that one is able to systematically take people through the care program. The provision of comprehensive HIV/AIDS programs to and services to offenders is the fourth strategy, and the final one deals with developing and implementing a needs-based curriculum development and care programs, a full barrage of programs that we are developing for special categories of offender as defined in the white paper. We have in the white paper identified that you cannot deal with offenders if they are homogeneous category. Apart from dealing with them on the basis of the offense that they've committed, we need to look specifically at the issues of disability, the issues of gender, the issues of age, and issues of foreign national, and ensure that we have tweaked our program to be able to address those specific needs. Moving then to the targets for the care program, we are shifting from the number of social work sessions, but you'll see here that we are still in the process of finding the correct balance in relationships. But what we want to be able to measure is the percentage of offenders participating in social work sessions. The goal for this year would be more than 101,000 sessions, and we then translate that into the percentage of offenders that would participate. So social work sessions is psychological services and spiritual care sessions, but moving from the number of sessions to shifting to measuring the percentage of offenders. Obviously, what we need to emphasize is that we need to adjust our measurement system to be able to generate the information in relation to the offenders participating rather than the number of sessions that are taking place. Moving to the social reintegration program, the measurable objective is in terms of ensuring that we are able to equip people, offenders, to facilitate their social acceptance and effective integration into the community. The indicators that we have identified here would be, firstly, the percentage of offenders who are eligible for consideration for parole. So we need to ensure that we have a baseline information of the number of offenders who are eligible for consideration of parole, and that we then measure the percentage who in fact are eligible for parole. And that then relates to the second one, which is the percentage of offenders who are in fact on parole. We then obviously deal with the aspect of tracking the non-compliance with parole conditions. And we've done this in two senses. The one is people who have come from correctional and parole supervision. The second is those who have violated correctional and parole supervision conditions. So we have an ability to look at more serious elements of people who have completely, and those who may have violated and be able to measure those two separate things. We also want to then be able to track the percentage of offenders participating in the integration program. Those may be programs provided by us, and maybe programs provided by an integrated support system that involves participation of other government departments or NGOs that work in the community. Along with our refining of our approach to social reintegration, we also want to be able to track the percentage of the probationers who are on community service orders. Obviously, that is an aspect that we would like to be able to significantly advance, because with advancing that, we would be enhancing the confidence of the judiciary in correctional supervision as a non-custodial form of sentence, a key challenge that we need to be able to deal with. The strategies then in relation to social reintegration, the review and alignment of policy procedures, ensuring that the standards for people social reintegration are critical aspects, and you will see in the handout presentation including the social reintegration, it does give you detail of the targets year by year, but also gives you detail of where the policy development processes are. The second strategy that we've identified here is the effective administration of the correctional supervision and parole system. And I think that is a critically important aspect we need to flag, because it relates directly to the priority that we identified of the case management system. If our sentence stands aren't in place, if our case management system aren't functioning effectively, if our correctional supervision and parole boards aren't functioning effectively, and if our community corrections officers aren't functioning effectively, our ability to deal with and to deliver on that priority becomes really impaired. So it's a critical aspect, particularly given that the all these are available to you, and given that you have medicine systems, there's a conversion of medicine available to you, and if you're still experiencing challenges in terms of structure, the group of patients, the therapist who's delivering on the pain management system, we flag that as a two-step. So this strategy relates directly to that priority. And then obviously the effective implementation community group system relates to the challenge in particular of transforming our community corrections offices to offices that are properly appropriately resourced and have the correct policy and procedures to be able to deliver on the new approach to social reintegration. Moving to our targets for social reintegration, we want to be able to track the percentage of cases that are heard by the parole board with the offender being released on parole. We are able to establish a measure of how many people who are appearing in front of the parole board indeed are released on parole. We also want to be able to measure the relationship between the CMC recommendation, case management committee recommendation, and the parole board decision. Key element that would affect the effectiveness of our case management system. We also have instituted the parole review board, that's what the acronym PRB, and I apologize for that, not going to be in the full term before we use the acronym, but the parole review board has been established, has been functioning effectively over the last year. What is also important then is for us to be able to measure the extent to which the cases referred to the parole review board indeed of reversal of the parole board decision. We also obviously want to have a mechanism for being able to reduce the level of violation of people when they're on parole or in probation and reduce that by in some as a baseline that has been established in our next time. So that again will be something that will increasingly reducing the level of violation. We also, particularly because of the newness of both the case management system and the regional supervision involved, that we needed to do a sample audit across 10% of the communities in parole to do a biannual monitoring report on the basis of the way in which that system is functioning. An important element to being able to ensure that the mechanisms that we need to be in place, in fact, are able to deliver what they should be delivering. Moving then to facilities, which is the last budget program, I have already flagged that we have an infrastructural development project or program because it has 17 different projects within it that assist us in delivering in a far more manageable sense around the facilities requirements. The measurable objective in relation to facilities is unchanged. The performance indicators that we've identified in relation to facilities would be one, to track the number of beds that we have in correctional centres, and secondly, to be able to track the number of new correctional centres that have been created. That would obviously address the building of the new aid facilities. The other indicator that we want to be able to track is being able to ensure that we are improving quite significantly on the management of correctional needs. We've identified the management of the maintenance element of our infrastructure as a key element that we need to be able to track and make significant improvements on. It also becomes a critical aspect given the amount of the value that is invested in our infrastructure, that we need to ensure that we're able to maintain it to an appropriate level. The strategies then that we have identified in the facilities program, and obviously each of the strategies in all of the budget programs is broken down into strategy implementation plans, so you'll begin to feel how that strategy relates to the operational delivery or the service delivery on that budget program. The compliance with facilities policy and procedure minimum requirements is a critical aspect. What I want to emphasize there is that with the Remand Retention Project, we are going to land up with minimum requirements for correctional centres, minimum requirements for remand detention facilities. And then a process, obviously, of ensuring that we are able to shift in that direction. In the remand detention project, we have identified 10 centres that will be dedicated remand detention facilities. They would obviously then go through an upgrade process to comply with the minimum infrastructure requirements for a remand detention facility as opposed to a correctional centre. And again, what we need to emphasize in terms of the compliance issue is that there is legislation and regulations from outside of critical services that we need to be able to comply with, and obviously our partnership with public works is key in terms of being able to ensure that we can integrate those requirements into the policy and procedure framework of critical services. The second strategy then deals with upgrading the building of new facilities, the replacement of obsolete facilities, and the upgrade of our facilities. The portfolio committee will be very aware of the fact that we've got correctional centers that have been built over 100 years, series almost, built with no very clear set of minimum requirements. We now have the minimum set of requirements. We need to ensure that we can upgrade facilities to meet the kinds of requirements that have been built into the new generation correctional center blueprint that was developed in the process. The third strategy relates to the maintaining of the facilities, and maintaining both in the sense of the day-to-day maintenance of the facility as well as the major maintenance projects that need to be sustained within the project. And the last strategy in terms of facilities is providing detailed office accommodation for all of the department's needs, and that would cover the head office and the regional offices, but most importantly in terms of service delivery, the issue of the community relations offices and ensuring that they are appropriately located, that we don't have community relations offices above a street, and that they are obviously able to service the community of people who need to use those offices. To move then to the targets for the facilities program. The first is obviously relates to the implementation of approved policies and procedures in management areas and ensuring that we are able to issue an inspection on that basis to measure the compliance level. The bed capacity is a target for the next year. 90% completion of the Kimberley New Generational Centre. The commencement of construction of two facilities to replace obsolete facilities. That is an aspect which in our development of a five-year facility plan, we're able to identify obsolete facilities and replace them on a roster basis or a sequential basis. The construction of three of the upgrade projects will be commenced. I think the important aspect to emphasize perhaps in terms of these targets, very few of the facilities strategies or strategy implementation plans are in fact 1 year projects. They tend to take across a number of years. So you'll find that in the 1 year we'll construct one or two of the upgrade projects, and it will take a couple of years for those to be commenced. But we have built into the strategic plan the commencement and completion of those projects. The maintenance projects that are identified here are the larger maintenance projects. It's not the day-to-day replacing of a recent cap and repainting the building, but it's the major maintenance projects. So the renovation of kitchens, for example, would be an aspect of that. So part of the target for the next year is to be able to do a maintenance audit that will then enable us to ensure that there is a sustained program of maintenance. And then the last two aspects relate to the issues of sustainable use of accommodation, ensuring that we're able to track that. Chairperson, that covers the budget program. I think in conclusion, we just wanted to re-emphasize the fact that we are in a process, a developmental process of aligning our planning and resourcing and reporting processes. The Commission has already referred to the monitoring, evaluation and research project that has a number of streams that will, during the course of next financial year, add value to the way in which we can hold ourselves accountable to the portfolio committee and obviously provide us with a far more objective basis for decision making and further planning. The operational involvement that we have had in both the strategic planning process as well as the operational planning processes is going to, I think, enable us far more to enhance delivery and ownership of the strategic plan, a process again which is the beginning of a process that will be enhanced during the course of the coming financial year. The finalisation of the framework for monitoring of program performance information with Treasury would also add very significantly to our ability to deliver on our strategic plan and to enhance the performance information that we're able to you. That process, though, without the conclusion of the monitoring, evaluation, and research policy that clarifies roles and responsibilities in terms of managing the performance information within the department, we're not enabled actually to be able to hold ourselves accountable in a way that we would like, both for our own management as well as in terms of public accountability. Chairperson, that's the end of my presentation. I apologize if it's a bit long, but I think it's hopefully has given sense of the way in which we're trying to take on board some of the comments that we've had from the portfolio committee in the past. Of the strategic plan is great, but are you actually being able to deliver on it? I think we've tried to be far more realistic in terms of the targets, and I think with enhanced performance information, more clearly identified performance indicators, certainly helps us to be more specific about what we can and cannot do. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. No, you have not wasted our time, Jane. This is our work. We are having time until 1 o'clock. Very good. We are flying, taxpayers are flying, you people from Victoria. You can't come here for half an hour or 45 minutes for an hour. That is what we are supposed to do. To listen to the department, get a briefing, interrogate the document thoroughly. And not a 5 minute a presentation and there we go. No, you have not wasted our time. Thank you very much for this this document. I'm sure that the members will now first ask questions before we go over. Yes,
Commissioner. Just to show the commission, I wonder if we can't deal with the PNP presentation. Because some of the questions are answered by the election commission itself.
No, that's fine, Commission. I see that the members are agreed to that. But I hope that members will also highlight some of the issues that they have, because I have made a lot of notes here. But it's fine. Over to you, Commission.
Good morning, I'm the Chairperson, member of the Portfolio Commission. I'm a National Commissioner, colleague, and present here. The purpose of my presentation is to do the finance aspect of the presentation. It was a combined effort between strategic planning and finance and trade, because a very rigorous process has been interrogated. To come with the doctor to visit the committee this morning. The presentation of cover aspects where we put the first 30 slides really cover the major programs and the budget allocation to these programs over the past 4 years.
Yes, that's right.
And the next slide, number 8, would cover the cost drivers taking into account in the allocation of the budget. We talk briefly on the provision of the vacancy rate and the deposit amount of budget allocation per program over the end of the period. And then we give a summary in totality for DPS of the amount allocated over the entry period for GFS classification, and the additional amount over the allocated budget baseline. Slide 13 deals with the funds specifically earmarked for a particular purpose. Slide 14 is with some efficiency gains, the savings that have been recommended or imposed past on our financial treasury. The final part of the presentation would be a discussion on how the steps we have taken, the measurement steps we have taken at DCS to align our budget to our strategic plan and to improve compliance and the delivery and the delivery process, the service delivery process for the forthcoming year. I did it before at Kennedy, and I think it's important to remind the committee that the largest part of our costs are fixed costs. Our compensation, accommodation, and resources for inmates. So it recommends that we impairment to improve our efficiency and management and mechanisms to improve our delivery and service delivery indicators and strong demand. And so this would be the basis of the presentation with me, which is the focus of the presentation. The budget and for the program administration, the Shriner has covered the purpose for this program and is extract from the DNE documents. But the next slide, Chairperson, if we talk about the funds allocated for the program administration, there's been an increase in the budget from 2.8 billion and over the years 2008, 9, 10, and 11, respectively, and the amount of 5 billion is 2.8 billion, 3.1. 3.3 billion, 3.6, and it is some of the key aspects for the increase in allocation of the MISC project and adjusted provision additional amount for the accommodation charges going forward. There is also the amount we've spoken previously of efficiency gains as mentioned by Treasury, where they had asked. Where there had been, and I was supposed to announce later on, but there had been very specific amounts that had been as the allocated the DCS in which we need to reduce improve our efficiency and our savings in certain categories, particularly within the administration budget. Next program is security, for which purpose is itemized on the slide, and the allocation for the security program is also been increased from 3.4 billion, 3.8 billion, 4.1 billion, and 4.4 billion respectively over the years 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2011. These are mainly attributed to improvements in security within prisons and additional allocation of personnel costs for the Kimberley Correctional Services, as well as additional allocations for the implementation of the Resolution 1 of 2007. There's also been an amount allocated to inflation adjustments for the security program, as well as the additional allocation for personal information of security equipment. The activities of this program are linked in the terms of the center. There's also been a communication to this has that approximately 91% of this budget is for personnel budget over the series. The program correction. There's also been an increase in this allocation, in this budget allocation from 1.064 billion to 1.1 billion, 1.2 billion, especially over the years. These are mainly due to the implementation of the white paper on correction. Some examples of the main projects will be risk management, profiling of offenders, case management committees, training of staff members on risk management, and phasing the implementation of the offender rehabilitation part. Furthermore, it's also to fund the establishment of parole boards and correctional supervision and machinery and equipment in our rehabilitation as well. There's also an additional need for supervisory personnel within the budget given the newness of the nature of some of these programs and the rigor and intensity of some of the delivery aspects within the community. There's also been a shift of some funds from this to the program development and care, some corrections. It is really to align me to the white paper project implementation. It's not in the decrease, but merely a shift in funds on that, and as you outlined on the slide. Program change. There's also been an increase in this budget allocation from 1.2 billion to 1.3, 1.5 and 1.6, respectively, over the 4 years. When I say 4 years, we're talking of the base year and the forthcoming 3 years. The main factors contributing to this is implementation of the premium system and the provision of additional remuneration for healthcare workers. A progressive implementation of HIV and AIDS programs nationally. And it will be mentioned that this is not the sum total of the usage of these funds within this program. We also have funding from to utilize, we have do see funds for the HIV disease allocation, so from other donor funding as well. The program for development, the allocation, the purpose is itemized as per the UNDS document and the slides that have been, and the allocation, there's been an increase in the allocation as well from 394 million to 97 million 476,509. And it's mainly due to the effort to put on rehabilitation of offenders at the center of activity, which includes, amongst others, training of offenders to ensure they still respond to the government in various trade aspects. Social reintegration, there's been an increase from 371 million to 386,411 and 442 million. And that is mainly due to the phasing to implementation of the Social Reintegration Action Plan. The China's presentation has given detailed aspects of that. And to promote the use of community day centers options to deal with offenders. Our program facilities, there's been an increase in this budget from 1.3 billion to 1.9, and this mainly due to the rollover in the previous year of funds for the construction of the Kimberley Curriculum Center. The general increase of the budget allocation with the exclusion of the rollover fund the previous year is really accounts for a visit from 1.4 billion to 1.44 to 1.7 and 18.4 billion. In the last year, that is mainly attributed to the additional funds for the operation of the 5-plan, which will have then provided an additional 18,000 bed spaces once it has been constructed. And the funding provision for the construction of the new Kimberley Correctional Center, which is planned to be completed at the end of 2009, and increase the capital budget for the upgrade and renovations of existing facilities over the medium term, which will create an additional 2,180 spaces. Slide 8, we talk about the key cost drivers that have been infiltrated in the allocation of our budget. They are personnel numbers, our inmates, including awaiting trial detainees, the supervision cases and parole, the implementation of white paper projects. The following slide gives us an indication, and I will just talk to you briefly. Our personnel, there is a breakdown per region, but in totality, our personnel numbers at this point are about 42,300 people. Our inmates, including awaiting trial detainees, are in total approximately 158,000. And the supervision cases and parole are approximately 63,000. And then the implementation of the white paper project. So in total, CCS has with the 168,000 inmates, including the waiting time detainees and the people under supervision with parole, is about 62,000, which is approximately 240,000 people which are responsible for in various categories, so within the curriculum system. Being a major intensive organization, I think it's important to flag that the vacancy rate, our total finance of 45,000 the Kimberley HMG given to the first hospital to 46,091. According to the annotation of the national treasury, the projected vacancy rate was approximately 2,000, which means that 44,000 folks in totality. At present, our numbers show that we have 42,000 folks. Here, the following table is the numbers I've spoken to earlier. It just gives us a table per category of program. The first is dated the current year, and the next three are the next 3 years. Those are the numbers I've spoken to come out in this afternoon. And slide 11 gives us the GSS card classification on the same numbers. Slide 12, she gives us a breakdown of our NCS allocation for the next 3 years. We have the top rotation of our budget baseline, and then additional funds that have been allocated for the specific purpose. Our personnel cost for the mission recreation center is 50, 60, and 190,000 for the next 3 years. Provision for the PPP prison space is 1.6 billion in the year 2010 and 2011. A resolution 1 of 2007, we received 165 million, 194 million, 203 million in 3 years. The inflation adjustment for accommodation charges is set to be 45 million, 68 and 94, and compensation of personnel inflation that we added to the 58 97, 121 million in 3 years, and non-personnel inflation adjustment was 32, 36 and 37 million respectively. Earlier I've spoken of efficiency savings adjustments to baseline, which Treasury has also advised us to implement, and they've given guidelines on whether these can be implemented. And they were 46 million, 72 million, 140 million respectively over the 3 years. The following slide, we talk about earmarked funds specifically for our facility. Funds devolved from public works in 849 are 1 billion and 1.1. That is really for property management, lease building principles, raise taxes and so forth, and accommodation and upgrading and unplanned maintenance, etc. Relates to property management. The next amount here, the bottom is for upgrading of existing facilities. And this is just upgrading of infrastructure. These amounts are included in the base in the figure that we have mentioned with them, because it was important because of the magnitude of these numbers to highlight in the efficiency gains that have been recommended on to implement. These are some of the guidelines which we would then roll out to all the branches and the regions. With the unnecessary travel and subsistence costs, mistakes, marketing and communication initiatives, entertainment costs, and weaknesses in supply chain management. This table gives an indication of the breakdown that we have at this stage at the CS, the guidelines we agreed in implementing the recommendations mentioned above. The big figure at the bottom, other, that's 11. And then at 58 and 95, but that mainly talks to administration costs, which includes administration stationary vehicles, transport, human materials, consumables, etc. There are various kinds of discretionary expenses which you believe could be. It comes with a lot of aggressive change in culture and efficiency that would have to be implemented to meet those targets. Is really being a very labor intensive, the very majority part of our budget being fixed costs. And we have various projects to implement, and the measures we have introduced to really refine and aggressively manage the alignment of the budget and the funds to the strategic plan that had been tabled, and the deliverables which had been very specifically with the performance indicators that had been tabled as well. Among the steps that we have introduced to align you, if there is a quarterly budget committee meeting, we also introduced monthly, but as a quarterly budget committee meeting, then it's aligned to the ERA process to talk about budget allocations and measure how between on those and programs. Over and above, we introduced monthly budget sharing committee meetings, we might measure very aggressively on a monthly basis to over and understand and the alignment of subjects and its corresponding things in the year involved. It's been a constant criticism at GCS for understanding alternatively not spending on the project that can be allocated, and these steps that have been introduced to monitor them in a proactive way as opposed to being just reactive. These would be linked very clearly to people's key performance indicators, their business plans, and bonuses and increases, and to go a step further as well for disciplinary action for overspending or underspending. The people do not understand that we have to manage projects, which is a huge problem we had. There currently are monthly financial meetings, but if you really make them compulsory at all branches, these are things that are done at all branch level. These initiatives are also applicable to all the regions and area managers as well, because that's where the money is really spent on that. Many that have already been implemented, which is very effective, and it's been a budget blocking put on that. So prior to any spending for which there's been excess, there would be a budget block on that, and then first we need to go back and look at EPR funds, etc., and then follow the process of that. And there is an in-year monitoring which is done on the monthly basis as well. See, the following slide just tells out the detail of the initiatives which you mentioned earlier, but being a Jewish department very decentralized, you also see the need for having policy and guidelines, but also very specific rules to be to follow the rules that are included in the 19th area. Then you come to slide 16.
Just to avoid some confusion, the last document that was circulated doesn't contain this information as part of your original submission. So if you can just go back to the original submission to this document.
Yes, it is in there.
If I may proceed, Commissioner, any question?
Yeah, you can.
On slide 16, you will also subsequently outline for the level of expenditure at the department, the current level of expenditure, and the 31st of January, the budget allocation being 11 billion, and we spent 8.7 billion, and the total amount available is 2.6. The ideal political expenditure would have been 80%, and we're currently on 77%. The following is a slide showing we give an explanation of the reasons for the underspend. The main reason for at this stage for the underspending is the bullying level for our Kimberley project, which is less than has been suggested. The other point is in compensation of employees, which is additional financial implications resulting mainly from the resolution 1 of 2007. So while we had a higher vacancy rate than we had initially anticipated, but funds from those had been used to fund the implementation of resolution 1 of 2007. This was done with the necessary notification done to National Treasury at that point in time. And you talk about the load bearing equipment services is an advanced payment for these issues, not just made in January, but you anticipate these funds to have gone through by the end of February. On the dealer proactive measure implemented to private departments to actively pursue public works and other service providers to bill up the season in February and March for recanting for the relevant equipment services. These are often ones you do not have direct control over, but we are trying to manage it on a very proactive basis at this point. Slide 16.1 just gives a breakdown in shape of the various categories of program of exchange levels, and they pretty much are online except for the facilities which is way below the part of the system. Slide 16.8 is a graph, it's a visual in totality, giving the sense they're talking to the same number of figures, to the same figures, and 16.2 is the classification, geographic classification, which is pretty much the same figures we have spoken to. So that is the end of my presentation. It sounds short, but it is a combination of the work of planning and finance, and there has been rigorous interaction whereby we can match and align the budget that has been allocated to the strategic planning and be held accountable for the funds that have been allocated to the GCS.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you to the two chief deputy commissioners who will agree with me that the two of them are squeezed between two very senior managers, very nicely managed to pick up one error in the presentation that I want to correct briefly to take revenge for the decision. The reference to the five correctional centers that will result in 18,000 bed spaces is, of course, not correct. The five will result in 15 bed spaces. And Kimberley is the sixth that would result in 80. So, because I know this is a very vigilant committee, I have to correct it before it's picked up the mind. But thank you to the two chief deputy commissioners for this issue.
No, thank you very much, Commissioner. No, it was a very good presentation. But I think that let us take a 5-minute body break, and then we will come back and interrogate the two briefings. I think that you must have a chance in refreshing your face for 5 minutes, and then we will touch. There's no tea and coffee there. I'm sorry for you. That is fine. I know the commissioner will run somewhere. And shake and my wife.
Yeah. What could be the
that's the only one question I can answer. Roll over. Did you see
it? Yeah, roll over. I'm going to see it roll over.
You can't do it that time. Only one can do it.
No, I'm going to see the UCA. I'm going to see the UCA social integration. And the
problem.
So what are you going to do?
No. I was
that's
why
where is it? Where is it?
I've seen it all over the year. I don't know. and
Thank you.